streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is March 6th, 2013. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight with Mr. Rick Daniels. He has a very powerful story. As a child, he was sexually abused and used in the drug game by parents and family members, eventually taken from those family members and made a ward of the state. He did live his life and overcome many obstacles along the way. So we're going to hear his story tonight and his powerful testimony. But before we bring him on, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, how you doing, ladies and gentlemen? We thank everybody for always tuning in every Wednesday night. And once again, I always start off my introduction. We just like to thank all our members out in the streets that educate our kids against gang, drugs, and violence. And also, we would like to thank all our members behind the prison walls, which we are in 150 prisons across the country, men and women, federal and state. We just like to say a big up to you all as well for educating the ones that's got out dates and on their way back out here to do right. And I'd like to give a big shout out to my three brothers that's doing life in three different Detroit prisons, my boy Robbie and Marvell and Christopher, you know. So without being that said, we'd like to just pass the mic to my man and let him formally introduce himself and we can get this message started.
Okay. You want me to say something?
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, hello. My name is Rick Daniels. I am the owner and head coach of Black Scorpion Boxing, Fitness and Self-Defense. I come from Detroit, Michigan, and I was born and raised in Detroit on the east side. Went to Kettering High School, but along the way I also visited several of our fine state institutions because I was a ward of the state. Early on, my mother was a prostitute, and my father was her pimp, but she was one of his many women that he worked that worked for him. So growing up, I was raised over on the east side. My mother worked in a brothel that was actually on Forest and Alexandrine, I want to say. And I remember looking out of the brothel window at the Metropolitan Tag Company on Forest and watching the different tricks and jobs come and go as they used to do and everything. Well, along with my mother being a prostitute, she also prostituted out my little sister, who was at the time, she was 6 years old. She had her turning tricks as well. And, you know, having us steal and different things of that nature, we bounced from the Brewster Projects over to the Jeffries Projects, and then we finally settled in the Herman Garden Projects on Joy Road in Rutland. Well, living over there, you got the different gangs. I remember the Herman Garden Killers was there. You got the Earl Flynn's back in my day. That was pretty hot, pretty popular back then. And a couple other crews like the Young Boys Incorporated and the Pony Down Crew. Well, I wasn't in a gang because I was in group homes. I made the route from DJ Healy to Boysville, Michigan, which was over on Canfield and McDougal. That was one of the homes I stayed in the longest. That's the way I went to Kettering High School at. But we had our own little gang within the group home because we was beefing with the kids in the neighborhood. We was beefing with each other when we was in the house. So it was basically like growing up in a junior institution. Fortunately, in one of the foster homes that I happened to be in was over on Livernois and Warren, which was walking distance to Cron Gym. So I used to walk over there to go swimming until one day I heard the speed bag in the basement. And I went down there, and I was amazed at the guys that were boxing down there. And it was hot. It was 135 degrees during the daytime. They used to come in there and crank the heat all the way up to 135 to get the guys working and motivated and sweating in there. And it was one of those places where you train hard and you fight easy. The hardest fights that they ever had was actually in the gym. And I remember going there and seeing guys like Bernard Mays, who was probably the best fighter that Clark ever had. But he caught an armed robbery case, went to prison forever. And then so nobody ever really knew about him unless you were actually in the gym. There was another guy by the name of Ricky Womack, who I used to run with. Ricky Womack actually beat Evander Holyfield twice going into the Olympics. He also beat Uriah Grant. But nobody knows of him because he got an armed robbery case, did 15 years in prison, came out and committed suicide. But there was a long history of people that came from Kronk Gym that nobody ever heard of that were even better than the champions that are world famous. Like Bernard Mays, he used to chase Tommy Hearns around the gym. Emanuel Stewart used to have to make Tommy Hearns get in the ring with this guy. And Tommy Hearns is a six-time world champion. But this guy here, he was so bad that didn't nobody want to touch him. The same thing happened to me. I had great boxing skills, but because I was awarded a state and in group homes and foster homes, I was never allowed to join the team. But I was trained by the same trainer as James Toney, which was Mr. Bill Miller and Walter Smith. They trained, they were the day-to-day trainers inside Kronk Gym that teach the fighters the actual boxing basics. Like you had, like in New York, you had Customato, who trained Mike Tyson, but Customato was really the figurehead of the gym. Teddy Atlas is the one that trained Mike Tyson day-to-day and oversaw his boxing development. Well, that's how I ended up getting involved in boxing, and boxing helped me throughout, even though I ended up going in the military, and later I went to prison. Boxing has always pulled me back to reality and back to focusing on what I wanted to do, which was always be a world-famous boxer. Well, now I'm too old to do that. So I train, and I'm training a group of kids at our church. I train them for free every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 6 to 8, and then from Saturday from 11 to 2. And we also go over not just boxing, but I teach them boxing history. From all the way back from Jack Johnson to Sam Langford to Henry Armstrong, all the different historians of boxing. They have to write reports on this. They have to know the history of boxing. I teach them school homework. We go over to school homework because I don't want them to be like a Mike Tyson to make $300 million and at 40 he's broke and penniless. They need to know finances, how to take care of their money. And unfortunately, one of the things that I came out of prison with was my associate's degree. That was really all I had because I didn't have any family to come home to or anything. When I finally came out of prison and I came back to Detroit, they gave me $25 and a bus ticket. I got back to Detroit with $13 and I was homeless. So I went and stayed down in the shelter on Cass and Brainerd and stayed in there for a little while, until I met a guy who let me come and just live with him for free, and he helped me get on my feet. And I realized nobody can do it on their own. You know, we all need help. And unfortunately, I committed a crime that took me away from being able to fulfill my dream as a boxer. But that dream is still alive through the kids that I train. And I can show them that the streets really don't, like the name of the show, the streets don't love you, you know. And I'm trying to catch them before the streets do, because it's bad out here. And it's not getting any easier. It was bad in my day, but it's even worse now because there's so many things that these kids have access to, like social media, like being able to pick up a cell phone, you know, being able to be on the internet and talk to people, and you don't even know who you're dealing with. I got a 13-year-old daughter, and I'm scared to death of her having a Facebook page or being on the internet or different things of that nature, because you don't know who she's dealing with. You know, but like I said, the program that I run It's a mentoring program, so it's all free for any church member that goes to our church. My thing is just to keep them busy, keep them active, keep them doing something, as well as getting them fit and teaching them a sport that not only teaches discipline, but it teaches hard work and dedication. You know, and I train them like we still, like I'm in the military. I work them hard, and that's where my enjoyment in life comes from at this point, is catching kids before the streets get them. And I lose some every now and then. I got a gangbanger now that I'm trying to get his crew to come in and join the team. Because, you know, if you like to fight, if you want to fight, or if you have aggressive behavior, then let's put it towards something useful, something positive, so they can get rewards and trophies and ribbons and travel the world, as opposed to going to prison and ended up in an early grave, because that's the only place it's headed to.
That's right. And so you do a lot of mentoring with these kids, and, you know, your history, you know, allows you to be able to connect with a lot of kids that have gone through different things like that. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you do with the kids as far as mentoring.
Well, as far as mentoring, I teach them everything that it takes to be young men. And I use boxing as basically boxing is a gateway to bring them to church. I'm trying to bring them to church and show them that even though life may not be exactly the way they want it, God always has a hand in it and is always carrying them and always looking out for them. And I didn't know this, you know, during the times where I was in these group homes and wondering, you know, how come I don't have parents like the other kids have? How come I'm living in roach and rat infested projects when other kids got, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots and G.I. Joe and playing and everything? But God had a plan for me, which was to be able to reach and connect with all these children. And I'm able to connect with children of all backgrounds and all walks of life. I don't care what the situation may have been, if they're getting molested at home, if they're getting beaten at home, if they don't have a home, if they're homeless, if, you know, if they have a mother who's out on drugs, a father who's out on drugs. My father went from pimping to selling drugs to using drugs to burning himself out and finally catching AIDS from dirty needles and dying of AIDS. But before he died, he turned his life over to the Lord, and he had 12 years of work that he dedicated himself to changing and helping people like himself. And that's part of where I got the spirit of doing it from, is that I was able to watch him and see him change and have him apologize to me for raising me in that lifestyle. Because, I mean, I can remember, like, at 10 years old, I got a 38 special for my birthday, and I was taken out and taught how to shoot. And then when my mother was turning tricks, you know, she's sitting up here. I'm already in the hotel room, so when the guy come in there, I'm sticking him up. I'm robbing him. Or I'm under the bed going through his clothes, but if he come up and pull up, I got my pistol on me to do work. I watched my mother kill a couple right in front of me in the Herman Garden Projects. And those are things that stick with me, but they're also things that have allowed me to connect with these kids, where it doesn't matter what the problem may be, I can reach them and I can talk to them. And I think the difference is I don't talk at them. I talk to them. And like right after I got married, right before I had my daughter, I was working in Denby Group Home, which was one of the group homes that I was in as a child. And I remember it was the best job that I ever had, and that's where I realized what I should be, what my talents were. And that was connecting with the baddest of the bad kids, the kids that people usually want to throw away, the kids that people don't want to be bothered with, the ones you want to cross the street when you see them. That's the group of kids that I go intentionally looking for, because I can relate to them. And I've been successful in doing that my entire life. So now, you know, it's just a blessing that I'm able to sit down with kids that some of these kids don't have heat when they get home, don't have hot running water. You know, I had two kids last week who their father is trying to help them change, and we're in church practicing. Now, we're in church for 3-4 hours practicing on a Saturday. We're not in a strip club. We're not at the bar. We're in church. And the mother put the husband's stuff out because he was in church for too long. Those are the type of issues that I'm dealing with when I'm dealing with these children. That, you know, that same group of kids, that same family of kids is out fighting, and the mother's out in the streets fighting with them. Not trying to stop them from getting in the, you know, aggressive street behavior, but she's actually promoting it, telling him to go out there and do work. I don't advocate for anybody to just stand up and be taken advantage of, but at the same time, there are parameters that we need to be careful about, and I can only do so much with the children. That's why I try to get as many parents involved as possible, because it takes all of us to help change and raise these children. You know, like I meet kids on the street and I get gangbangers to come into the program. I got a couple gangbangers in there now. And the reason why they're in the program is because I was able to stop a brawl that they were involved in. It was two different high schools that were going to brawl. And I got right in the middle of it, as stupid as it sounds, I got right in the middle of it and broke the whole thing up. And look here, if you like to fight and you want to be aggressive and you like beating on people, I got the perfect program for you. I got the perfect program for you. And that gets them into the church. And once I get them into the church, then it's a matter of changing that behavior. But the boxing is what really gets them in there, because it allows them to release some of that aggression, to release some of that pain, but in a controlled environment. And they're developing teamwork, camaraderie. They're starting to look out for each other. And as far as the mentoring, we go as far as, I mean, we go from the basics, how to wear a pair of pants, how to pull your pants up, how to wear a shirt and tie, how to tie a tie, how to comb your hair before an interview, how to go and get your work permit when you're 15, how to apply for a job, mock interviews, things of that nature, so that they're not, I'm trying to arm them with as much ammunition as they can possibly have before they go out into the streets. And then if they want to join the military, how to successfully join the military and have a career in the military, if that's what you want to do, or to get into auto sales and have a career in auto sales if you want to. You know, I came home in 1991 from prison homeless, and within 10 years, I'm mixing and mingling with the mayor and the top movers and shakers in the city of Detroit. You know, I'm on the radio. I got my own little radio show. I'm doing a cable public access television show, but that was because I wanted more than what I saw. And someone put a spark in me when I was young, and it was a counselor in a group home. I remember one of the guys' names was Mr. Temple, and one was Mr. Urell. We used to laugh about Mr. Urell being shell-shocked because he was a Marine in Vietnam. And I understand exactly what he means now because I've been in combat. But back then, you know, I just used to listen to him and try to pay attention to what he was saying. And it's funny how the things that he's saying, I'm saying now to my group of guys, to my group of kids, because I have girls also. But it's a great feeling to see the connection and to start to see where I'm stripping them down away from the gang and making our program more popular and cooler to be around than being in the gang. And I'm starting to see that now. So it's a great feeling to watch and observe, because some of them are really just looking for attention. They're looking for something to belong to. And if not something good, then it's going to be something bad. But they're going to find something to belong to.
My man. And that is totally, absolutely correct right there. And I just want to say, you know, I commend you for, you know, doing the right thing and changing your life around in order to educate others about what's happening out here. And God giving you a second chance to do that, you know. And I would like to ask you also, when you was going in and out to group homes and different things like that, I mean, how did that make you feel, you know? Because I know how it made me feel when I became a ward at the state of Michigan, you know? How did that make you feel when that jumped off?
I think it pretty much put a shell over me. I had a shield up already because of the sexual abuse that I had received from my uncle. He was molesting me when I was young, so I had a wall up against that. I had a wall up against, you know, my mother turning tricks with men and having sex with me because she was the first person I had sex with when I was six, and then she got some of her coworkers to show me the ropes when I got a little bit older. But it was crazy. I mean, it was one of those things that when I finally became a ward of the state, the second time I became a ward of the state at 11, we had been living by ourselves in the Hermagon Projects for a little bit over a week, but I had been taking care of us for several months prior to that. And it just so happened this one week she left us, and our neighbors called because they saw that I had been working at Farmer Jack on Grand River and on Joy Road Greenfield, carrying people's buggies all day for food, wasn't going to school or nothing, and I had a bunch of little kids in the house with me. So they called the state on me. Well, the state took us to our
house. You was doing the jitly thing.
Oh, yeah, I was carrying buggies from Farmer Jack, back when Farmer Jack and Gray Scott was on the corner of Greenfield and Joy Road by White Castle.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking at it.
Yep, I used to carry people's groceries, you know, for a dollar, a quarter, whatever they would pay me. And then if they had any good food in the bag, I would just run home.
Right,
just grab the bag and run on home. You know, we were stealing stealing out of Picky Pack supermarket on Joy Road, doing anything I could do to take care of them because I had three little brothers and sisters to take care of.
So
once we became a ward of the state, it really, they took us, I never forget, they took us to our aunt's house that night, and she couldn't handle keeping all of us. So the police asked, did we have any place else to go? And I said, we should go back to the group home. And I remember saying that, and I suggested that we go back to DJ Healy. And they took us to DJ Healy, and from there, my sisters got adopted by somebody, and my brother got adopted by somebody else. And then by me being almost 11, didn't nobody want me because I was too old. So it made me real angry being a ward of the state because they moved my sisters away, and they was in Detroit, but I didn't know they changed their names and everything. I didn't know even where they lived or nothing. I didn't see them for 17 years. And then my little brother, they changed his name too, and he got adopted, so I didn't see him for 14 years.
Right, and that's what I want to get to, you know.
Yeah, it made me angry. It made me so angry. And then the last, I remember when I finally shut down, was when I was 16. I was in Boysville, Michigan. It was on McDougal, off of right next to around the corner from the Eastside Rec Center and St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. Right
there on the Rec Center all the time on Canfield, right there.
You know where the St. Elizabeth Catholic Church is at, the big red church.
Yeah, well, you know, my grandparents stayed right there on Gallister between Garfield and Forest. You know, I used to go to Campbell School right there on
Okay, but that's where Boysville was at.
Exactly.
Boysville was right there on, and that's where we live, right next to St. Elizabeth Church, right across the street from the little barbershop, the underground barbershop.
Right. Yeah, my family all come from down in the Black Bottom, all through there, you know, the Guyton family.
Okay. Yep. So they had us going to East Catholic High School at first, but then we got kicked out of there. So all of us had to end up going to Kettering.
Right. Yeah. I went there for a hot second because we moved over there on our Strong. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Fun race back in the day. So I went to Burroughs and Trumley.
Okay. You went to Burroughs. I went to Burroughs.
Yeah, I went to Burroughs right there on Georgia and Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm. Then I was living on Mount Elliott and Gratiot back then across from Pioneer Supermarket.
My sister's old man, she's still with him right to this day. They stayed right there, California, across the street from Pioneer Supermarket, and his people still live there.
Okay. Yeah, we stayed across the street in that little apartment. It was a little small, like a four-story apartment building right there on the corner of Mount Elliott.
Right. And my mama used to have a place on Sylvester right off Grassy, right in back of that gas station.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we was deep east side. Then we moved to Warren and Newport.
Yeah. I used to be out there, too, on Warren and Newport. I used to be out there, you know what I mean, all through there. I used to be in the Warren County project for many years, too, you know?
Yep. So I'm trying to tell these kids here.
Same roles, bro.
Yep. I try to tell some of these kids here, you know, like the one little gangbanger I got, he in Hamity High School, which is like one of the softest little schools. It's a good school. It's a good school. And he trying to gangbang. And I'm like, look, man, you ain't even ready for what you kicking on the jailhouse door, and you ain't ready for that. You ain't nowhere near. I said, I swear you ain't ready for that, man. You ain't ready for that. He done had 5 pair of gym shoes since Christmas. You know, he got these True Religion jeans. It's $300 a pair and this and that. And I'm like, man, you are not ready. You little pretty, tall, yellow, light-skinned boy, you are not ready for what you're trying to get into.
You know,
I'm telling you, you ain't ready. I said, you ain't even ready for the boys' homes. I said, if you went to Maxie, you want to kill yourself.
Right.
You think I said Maxie ain't no different than Jackson.
Exactly. Little baby.
It ain't no only difference is the age.
That's it, you know.
That's the only difference is the age.
Yeah,
I said, but it ain't no different. Yeah, it ain't no different than Jackson.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And I was lucky that I did some boxing, that I started boxing on the west side at Crump.
Right, yeah.
Because
yeah,
by the time
I
got...
I used to go to Crump too, man, on Junction. You know, I used to go to Crump too when I was young.
Okay. And you was probably there back when I
was talking about.
Yep. They had guys there like Sugar Man was there. He used to come through there and just whoop people. He wasn't even a regular fighter. He'd just walk in off the streets and just whoop on people. And Obakar was there. Michael Moore was there. I did train with Michael Moore before he fought Evander Holyfield for the title.
Right. And my man who did that armed robbery with the 30-06, that was K-Man Lee nickname. That was K-Man Lee who pulled that off.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, I was running with them fools with Superbad and Ricky Womack and them. And, you know, because I was impressed with them. You know, they was doing what they did.
Yeah, Ricky
you know,
was good. Rick was good, too, when he was fighting, you know what I mean? I remember Rick, you know what I mean? But then when that shit had happened, you know, he died, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to be on the east side all the time, too, you know?
Yep. It was crazy, but it was such a great place to learn at, that those lessons stayed with me forever.
Any cat from Detroit that done survive the game, you know what I mean, and come from, you know what I mean, the hardcore, the streets, you know, like they say, we can live anywhere in any state, you know?
Anywhere. We was just talking about that earlier. I was talking about my street pass.
yeah, we can live in any state.
Well, what it was like, you and this pass thing, y'all guys from Detroit kill me with that, like, you need a pass to come in, come in. I said, it really ain't. I said, most guys need to run with a crew. They need to run with a crew to be wherever they are. I said, but I've been the kind of guy, and she's known me because she's been with me for 16 years, that I can go in anywhere, any hood, and I'm good. It's like It's like I was born there.
Right.
So you know, and I done been to places.
You know?
Yeah, and I done been places with her where she like, click, 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 click. She locking the doors. You got 5 minutes, or I'm pulling off on my own. You know, I'm hanging out at what they used to call the Carter over on 7 Mile and Outer Drive, East 7 Mile and Outer Drive. You know, it's like 100 guys out there. I'm good. Go ahead
all
and leave
day.
If you want to. I'm good all day.
My
and
auntie
in any
used
city,
have a house right there on Garland, right there off Outer Drive, you know, before you get to Conant.
Yeah,
I used to be all over in that too, you know.
I was all over that way. Tigers East, Randazzles, all over there by Randazzles, by the railroad tracks.
Yeah, the whole nine, you know. I used to be all up in there, sometimes taking them boys' bikes when I felt like I want to ride home and then want to walk off the tracks.
That's what we used to do, go over there on Kniff and Conant and Holbrook.
Run right through the railroad tracks.
Go right over the track, yeah.
That was the back way coming from when we used to live over there off that, like a Harper and Strong and all over that. That's when we used to take the back way and come back with their bikes.
Come back. We got four of us riding on the bike. We got four bikes where it's about 10 of us riding. We come back, everybody got a bike.
Yeah, that should be the good old days, man. But you're talking about that to these young kids now. They don't understand, you know what I mean? They think, you know, being a gangster or a thug is having a gun and shooting. Like I told a lot of cats, I said, man, I see my sucker can have a gun and kill somebody. You know, that don't make you no G, and that don't give you no stripes, you know? I say, you need to be who you are, man. I say, you're taking a life, and you can't get that life back, you know? I say, so you need to think before you react out here, because I say these cats are sending you on a mission, telling you, you know, you go do this and that, and you in the gang. I say, when I was coming up, bro, I say, you didn't have to get beat half to death to be in no gang. Either you was rolling or you what, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I was in the Bishop crew, old Van Eyck and Harper. We used to fight the chain gang at Kettering.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we was a little gang ourselves, just in Boysville, because we fight with the whole crew. Matter of fact, we was the reason that Boysville had to move from over on McDougal and Canfield all the way out to Mount Clemens, because we had to fight with some guys in the neighborhood, and they came over there to firebomb the building and everything. So the state shipped us all the way out to Clinton Township.
Right. Now, I say cats don't recognize, man, you know, the real, because they think, you know, they the first one did that. I say, look, bro, you ain't the first one that did that, man. It's been being did, man, before I was born.
And you ain't even doing it smart. You ain't even doing it like you trying to survive doing it.
You just a knucklehead guy that ain't even caring nothing about you, bro.
Yeah, I lost a group of boys last year that I had an 11-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 16-year-old. The 16-year-old was good, but the 11-year-old was the best. He was like an 11-year-old Pernell Whitaker. I mean, dude was sweet. He was nice, but he was the youngest. Well, the 16-year-old, he running around with these 18, 19-year-old cats out here in the apartment complex. And they kick it indoors in the complex that we live in, stealing flat screens. And they stole some dude AK-47. But that same day, dude come back out here with a whole crew of fellas, all of them packing. And the boy ain't at home, but his mama, his daddy, his two little brothers, his three little brothers, and his two little sisters at home.
Game over.
They looking for him. They looking for him, you know. The parents is begging for them not to kill everybody in the house, because they want to take out the whole family. So then they had to ban the boy from coming out here, and now the boy locked up for doing the same. Now the kids, the other guys that had him doing it, they still out here doing their same thing. But the young fella, he locked up, and now the little brothers, I lost them.
Wow. So what I want to ask you, Rick, man, you know, with your program that you do up in Flint with the gym and everything, you know, what would you tell these kids, man, that's trying to get into that discipline, boxing and different things like that, you know, that might not have a place to go to and that's might be listening to this interview? What advice would you give them?
I would tell them to find something that they're interested in and to go for it, to find a dream, have something that they care about. And it don't have to be boxing. It could be anything. Like my daughter, she's a really good boxer, but she doesn't like to box. She just does it because I'm her daddy, you know, and she's been around it her whole life. But she's a dancer, and she loves that. She wants to be an entertainer, you know, so we've supported her being an entertainer since she was little. And she's serious about that. And I would tell people that, first of all, find out who you are and love yourself and realize that God loves you and that there's a plan for you. And it don't involve you throwing your life away for some foolish dream of somebody else's, because The game don't love you. Game, I don't care who you think you are, how many times you done played it, it only how many times you haven't gotten caught. It only takes one time for you to get caught. Just one time. And you get caught that first time, and I done seen, I mean, we all watch 48 Hours. You see them as soon as they walk in the interrogation room, the love for the click is over with. They tell them before the cop even ask a question.
They done told on grandmama, man. You know, grandma.
They rolling over like it ain't like it's nothing. You know, I would tell them, you know, find something that you can do. Find something that you're interested in. If it's drawing, if it's tattooing, if it's basketball, baseball, if it's music, if it's art, if it's computers, find something to get involved in so that you're not just sitting around idle. And these parents, I would advise them to get with their kids and talk to them. Talk to them and find out. Don't talk at them. Talk to them. Because I've seen so many parents that, you know, their kids, I know their kids out here in the street. They know their kids at home. And at home, their kids is church kids. You would think they raising BB and CC whining. But out here in the street, their kid is a whole different person. They got a whole different personality. They out here sticking people up.
They doing all of that. And what we're going to do, Rick, we want you to hold that thought right there. We're going to go to a hot song. And this song we're going to tonight is my little homeboy out of Detroit. You know what I mean? This is little Maserati Rick. His daddy was my homeboy, Maserati Rick Carter, off the east side all day. So we're going to play little Rick's track, Ain't Nothing Like Home to Me.
Okay, yeah, little Maserati.
All day. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the hottest show worldwide, the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we play live music on the show, and that's my little homeboy right there, little Maserati Rick Jr. And me and his daddy grew up together, Maserati Rick Sr., rest in peace, homie. And we spend music here on the show, and we definitely still support the city. So we talked with our man, Mr. Rick, in the house. And, Rick, we want to just get back at you and ask you once again, man, the vision you have with the children now, you know, we got great respect for that, bro. And, you know, any events coming up with your boxers in the near future that you would like the viewers to know about?
Well, what we're doing right now is we're pretty much putting our team together. We have about 15 kids total that we sponsor, and we train them all for free. And what we're doing is in the next couple of months, we're going to have a couple exhibition shows just to raise funds for each kid to be able to get a license, because these kids can't afford the cost of the equipment and different things of that nature that it takes to box. So what I do is whenever I can, I order whatever I can order for them, gloves, wraps, mouthpieces, things of that nature. We're working on equipment and also any boxing gear, you know, and licensing and everything that the kids need. So that's what our fundraisers are going to be for. And we're going to have a couple exhibition matches just to raise money for that. I would say by next month, we plan on having our first match by the first month of April, by the first week of April. And then after that, we're going to have matches every month just to raise funds, you know, for the kids, to help them, you know, for travel expenses, getting gear and different things of that nature.
That sounds like a winner. And we also, you know, want to extend a hand for you and your camp. If, you know, you all ever start traveling or anything, you can come down and box on our card. You know what I mean? My wife's family own the Golden Gloves and the Junior Golden Gloves and the Carpal Gloves here in the state of Arizona. And we just gave our Golden Gloves event this past weekend, which was a great successful event, and that was the 66th annual Golden Gloves event her family put on. So we had a great time all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And oh, yeah, that's a good event there.
Yeah, and we have we had 51 bouts total, and we have another thing coming up March 23rd, March 24th at the Pinell County Fair. So who all want to get on that card, just email us, streetsdontloveyouback@gmail.com. Get us on the Facebook, and we're looking for, you know, a great, great show as well. And we're just doing a lot of great things, and give a shout-out to my wife's family, Kelly and Jen, who's doing great in that area. So, and a shout-out to my wife, who makes a lot happen behind the scene with our family. So just want to send that love out as well, you know?
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's great there. I'll appreciate it, too. I appreciate it because I'm trying to get them, trying to expose them to different things, you know, different ventures outside of Flint, get them outside of this area so they can see something different.
Right, and it's
so they can get the bug under them, get them wanting to see different things and travel. And, you know, I'm trying to get other boxers that I know of to come by and talk to them, just to, you know, motivate them, inspire them to do something different and strive for something different.
Right, without a doubt. So I just had to put that out there to you, Rick, to let you know we do that boxing thing here in Arizona real strong. And the history is real strong here in Arizona with my wife's family.
Okay, great. Oh, yeah, that's a good event, too. That's a good event, the Golden Gloves thing. We got it going here. We got it going on here right now. Matter of fact, the end of this month and next month, we got a big tournament going on here in Taylor. And then
around this time because you may go to regionals and then nationals.
Yep. And then what I would like to do is be able to get at least a couple of my people in open class, so that we can compete in the Ringside Nationals in Kansas City in August.
Right. Definitely.
That would be another. Yeah, that's another plan that we're striving for. I'm sitting here as we're talking, ordering gloves for mouthpieces for a couple kids that don't have them.
Right. Well, we know how that is because our gym has been free to the public since 1965, and it's, you know, we're nonprofit, but we don't have a lot of money either, and you know, so although we don't charge for the kids to come in, it's still a lot of kids. Like you said, it's hard for them to pay for that equipment, their gloves and their clothes and their shoes, and you know, everything's expensive.
Oh yeah, headgear, hand wraps, mouthpieces. And then with the little kids, I like to, I just got them the full face, no contact headgear. Just because I didn't want, you know, when it's this competition time, then they can use the regular headgear. But for now, as they're getting used to it, you know, I'm trying to keep them involved in the sport without them getting hurt. Because a lot of them are younger. Like I even have a couple five-year-olds in the group that, you know, of course they can't compete until they're 8 years old, but they have something to do 4 days a week.
And they learn. They learn responsibility, yep. And they learn discipline, and they learn, you know, we've through all the events we've done the last 3 or 4 years, we've met some young kids, and there's a few of them that, you know, that are 9 years old, 10 years old, 11, that just really stand out. You know, their personalities are just so outgoing, and they're so bubbly in the ring, and they're just little go-getters, and they're just fun to watch with them around.
It's a great thing to see, especially when you have those children that really love doing it. Because our ultimate goal is to have a safe haven, which is basically a place for kids to be able to come and do different activities after school. Like we have a ping pong table set up. We have a youth center next door with the ring in it. We have a youth center that also has, we're going to put a ping pong table in it, a pool table, a computer lab, a music studio. They already have the studio equipment and everything to go in there, and then a dance studio also. And, you know, just a place for kids to come. They may not want to box, and I don't want to try to push boxing on all of them, but the main thing is to have something for them to do, like we had Boys and Girls Clubs growing up.
They can feel like they belong, and that's what most kids need. They need to feel that they belong somewhere.
Oh, yeah, and have somewhere to come to after school that's safe, and they don't have to worry about getting attacked or jumped or having a fight or anything of that nature. You know, they can, like, because some of them may not want to be boxers. They may want to be a trainer or a coach or a promoter or a manager or whatever the case may be. You know, but like I said, the main thing is catching them before the streets catch them, because I could list, you know, the friends that I've had that from the group homes and that tried their hand in crack and it didn't work out so well. And I mean, I know a whole book full of guys like that, guys and girls. Mm-hmm. And there's no future in that.
Right,
there's really no future in it.
Rick, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions going back to your youth and both questions,
sure.
Because you went through it, you lived it, you know, and I want you to talk to the youth and even adults who, you know, have been molested or raped, and, you know, can you talk a little bit about what you went through it and what you could tell others that have gone through it that maybe have kept that secret inside of them for many years, and they're still very angry and put off and different things?
The first thing, if I was talking to a child that's been the victim of sexual abuse, child molestation, or anything of that nature, is to understand that it's not their fault and that they didn't do anything wrong. It's the adult's responsibility and the adult's fault as to what happened, because they're taking advantage of a child, of a minor. And it normally happens to children that are already going through different issues with their family. Like, for instance, with my mother being a prostitute, my father being a pimp, they weren't around. So I was left up to, when I wasn't with them, I was left up to being with my great-grandmother, who was born in 1905. She was old as she was old by the 70s. You know,
right.
So there was nothing that she could do
to
protect us. And that's how my uncle was able to take advantage of us. Now, unfortunately, for many years, I carried that hatred around and that self-hatred of being molested, that maybe there's something wrong with me. You know, I must have deserved it, or I must have done something to lay them on, to lead them on, or something of that nature. But I was 5 or 6 years old. There was nothing that I could have done to make a grown man want to have sex with me. You know,
exactly.
And not only me, but there were several other kids as well, including my sister. You know, but it took a long time for me to deal with it. I didn't actually even talk about it until with anybody until I met my wife in 1997. We sat down and we talked about it, and she helped me to deal with it even up until recently, just because through some twist of fate, I actually found his mother's contact information. And I went to visit her. She lived right behind Pershing High School. And she's telling me about him, and he's a cop for the city. Well-respected cop in the city. And asked me if I wanted to see him. But she doesn't have any clue about our relationship, you know, the extent of what our relationship is and the fact that he was molesting me. So the only thing that I wanted to do if I did see him was to take his life. And that was a lot of anger that I had within me that I had to deal with, because he didn't deserve to have that kind of power over me. And that's what it had been. He had had power over me for all these years. And I haven't seen him again. And I'm glad I didn't, because I truly don't know how I would respond to him. I know how I've wanted to for so many years, but I know that if I did that, that would only destroy my family and what I have going on, and he's really not worth it, because he probably don't even remember that he did it to me, because I was just one of many. Where it stood out to me because it was the one I was the one that it happened to. But I've dealt with it. I've had counseling for it. It's something that it's difficult to deal with, but I would tell a person to seek help. To if there's anybody that is sexually abusing you or sexually molesting you, that you need to seek help with somebody that you feel comfortable with, and do not under any circumstances let this person continue to hold that type of power over you and molest you, because they're only doing it because of your own fear and quiet cooperation. Because I've had the quiet children are the ones that they normally get away with those things in. Like my daughter, she's a talker. She's vocal. So there's never an opportunity for anybody to ever do anything to her without her coming and directly telling my wife and myself. You know, because that's just the way she was raised and the way that I've always made sure that I've protected her and schooled her in the ways of protecting herself at all times. That's the slogan that I got from boxing that I always use in life in general. Protect yourself at all times, because it comes in handy.
Didn't you ever feel like that was just maybe normal, because you watched your mom and she was prostituting, and just the lifestyle that you were around?
Well, I knew it wasn't normal because I don't like men. and he was a man having sex with me. So I knew that wasn't normal, for one. I've been around sex and the act of sex since I was real young. So it didn't surprise me at all, but he scared me. I was scared dealing with him, and I didn't know where to go or who to turn to. I didn't have anyone to turn to, and there was nobody that I could reach out for help. And so it's just something that I had to deal with, and there was really nothing I could do about it. But I would have, looking back at it in hindsight, I would have definitely contacted somebody or let someone know, even if it was just his parents, so that I wouldn't go back over to his house again. But it was something that was very painful and something that I had to deal with, and something I'll never forget.
Right. Well, I commend you for being able to talk about it, because I know it takes a lot of courage and a lot of healing to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, it was one of those things that it was probably the hardest thing to deal with in my life. I given up on my mother and father as far as, especially my mother, as far as having any type of normal relationship, mother-son relationship with her. I don't know if she's still alive or not, or if she passed on. The last time I saw her, I was in Boysville, and she was prostituting on the corner of Gratiot and McDougal. There's a Coney Island on the corner, and she was up there working. And we saw her in the group home. And as we're going down the street, we're talking about her. Oh, look at this lady, you know, look at this prostitute. You know, she looked nasty. She's standing there. You can tell she was cracked out. She was trying to call a trick and make some money or whatever. And we laughing at her as teenagers do. You know, we looking at her and talking and laughing and pulling up to her. And as we get closer, I realized that it was my mother. Now, of course, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything to anybody in the van.
Right.
Because they were like 16, 15 of us in the van. I didn't say anything to them, you know, because
right.
they would have clowned me forever. But
right.
I did go back to the group home and try to kill myself.
Oh.
And I ended up that night going to the hospital and getting my stomach pumped. I drank a bottle of bleach.
Wow.
And didn't work, of course. But it did make me pretty sick.
Made you pretty sick, yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, but that was actually, that is my last image of my mother.
Didn't I read somewhere that she went to prison?
Yeah, she went to prison, but this was after she must have gotten out of prison.
Okay.
But she went to prison in 76, she went to prison. This was in 1982.
Okay.
And 82. I was in Boysville by this time. I had been through a couple foster homes, a couple group homes, and I was in the group home, and we used to go on these outings on Friday and Saturday night. They would take us like to a park or Belle Isle or skating or something like that, and it would be like 15 of us in a van and going on an outing. And there she was, just standing on the corner selling her body. And when I saw her, I was just like, wow, that's my mother. It went from joking and laughing and, you know, oh, look at this nasty chick, you know, to that's your mother, you know. It broke me up. And I was tired. At that point, I was tired of dope and prostitutes and all that, because before the state came and took us, they both became really bad drug addicts, to the point where I used to have to shoot dope in them. They would go and get the heroin and stuff, and I would have to cook it up and make it into liquid in the Vaseline top and cook it up in the topper in the cotton swab in the cotton ball and cooking it, you know, and shoot them up. And if I accidentally spilled it or something, then I would get my butt beat. And it just, you know, it raised me to be a different type of person. It raised me to be to see things a bit differently than most people. But I care about these kids so much because I know what they're going through. You know, I know that what they're going through is horrible. It's horrible in most cases. And we don't talk to them to find out what's going on. We just talk at them. And it's hard being a teenager now. You know, I seen it was hard back then, but it's even harder now. You know, my daughter's 13. My daughter's 13, and she's getting at that age where she wants cell phones and Facebook pages and tablets and all that. And I told her we didn't even have a beeper back when I was young. We didn't have nothing. You know, we had pay phones back then. You go make a call and, you know, but I don't know. It's a different world, and they expect so much nowadays. They expect to be given so much. So yeah, if there's any way that I can help them, that's all I try to do is to help them, keep them busy, keep them out of trouble.
The other thing that I wanted you to talk about would be a little bit what you mentioned in your bio as well. Was that at a young age you held the gun and drugs and different things for your father, which what we know we call a drug minder, a gun minder for, you know, kids. A lot of people don't realize that young kids are used for those things because they won't get caught or they won't get in trouble if they're the ones with the drugs or the guns.
Absolutely. Well, it was my gun. I got a 38 special for my birthday when I turned 10 years old. And before that, I used to carry a knife. But I got a 38 when I was 10, and that was my birthday present. He took me out behind the house, showed me how to shoot it and how to load it and everything, and it was mine to carry. And I carried it all the way up until he was arrested. And I held drugs with him, sold drugs with him. I carried the stash, and he would make the deals, and then he called me over, and I would, you know, pull out the stuff. If somebody tried to get stupid or whatever, I didn't have to ever shoot anybody. But if the opportunity ever came, that's what I was there to do, was to have his back and to shoot to protect him or shoot to kill. So it was as I was growing up, it was an exciting life. I mean, I had a ball, to tell you the truth. As I'm growing up with my father and back when he was selling drugs, I thought it was the best thing in the world because he would bring home all types of stuff, televisions. I had bikes, radios, stereo component sets, 8-track players, cassette players, all kinds of stuff, jewelry, fur coats. And then as quick as he started bringing it in, he started using it, and then stuff just started disappearing. And I mean, everything that we had was gone. And then they were, you know, shooting just, I mean, it got to a point where he had burned out every vein in his body. He was shooting in his neck and his hands and his arms and his penis. I mean, every single place you could think of, to the point where he had abscesses on his legs that gotten so big that all he had to do was just pour the dope right in the open sore on his legs. It was a bad situation. But he turned it around, and like I said, I realize that everybody can change, and everybody has something to contribute to this world. And we all got to make sacrifices and do what we can to help to pay it forward and help people out. And no matter what you're going through, somebody else can be going through something that's just as bad or even worse. You know, and I've seen kids, my situation was bad, but I've seen kids that, when I went to the group home and worked in the group home that I was in as a child, it was great because I got to see these kids and talk to them and let them know that not only do I understand where you're coming from, I used to live in this room right here. I slept in this bed right here, the same bed you're sleeping in now. When I was 11 years old, I was in this room, in this very same cottage. And I understand that you're angry as hell. You know, you're pissed off. Why did your family have to be like this? But there's a purpose behind it. No matter what you think as bad as it is, there's always a purpose and a greater plan behind it. We just have the strength to endure and withstand whatever, you know, situation we're going through, because it's for a lesson later on in life. And had I not gone through these things that I went through, I wouldn't be able to relate to the kids the way that I can now. I wouldn't be able to talk to them and understand what they mean when they say their mother's a prostitute and they haven't had any food all day because, you know, they haven't been to school because they've been the one out working trying to make ends meet for their little brothers and sisters. I can understand where they're coming from. And I can also empathize with them and try to figure out a way to make it just a little bit easier, just a little bit better for them. and just, you know, just share whatever I can with them to try to help save them before, you know, save them before the streets get them. Catch them.
Exactly. Now, one more question. You did mention that you reconnected with your brothers and sisters. So can you tell us a little bit about how that happened and if you still
Let's see. My sister has 9 children, and she basically took after my mother, pretty much following in her footsteps. She's been in and out of jail, in and out of prison. Her kids have been taken in and out of state. They've been wards. All of her kids have been wards of the state. She's lost custody of them and back and forth, in and out of placement. And I actually was looking for her when I came back to Detroit. And I found her on microfilm in the main library downtown, where I saw a case where she had been convicted of actually kidnapping her kid during a supervised visit.
Okay. Wow.
It was crazy. Her son was taken by the state, and they used to have these supervised visits at the Spectrum Building.
Right.
And she went to the Spectrum Building, saw her son, and decided to take him home with, you know, have him jump out the bathroom window and go home with her. And so that's how I found her. That's actually how I found her. Now, the woman who had adopted my little brother, I knew who she was because when she adopted my little brother, she started visiting me in Boysville and coming to get me on the weekends so that I could spend time with him. So even when they transferred me to Boys Republic of Michigan out in Farmington Hills, I knew where my little brother was.
Okay.
So the first one I went and found was my little brother, and then I later found my sister, and my two sisters had been adopted together. So once I found the one sister, she knew where the other sister was. Now, unfortunately, we don't have the type of relationship that I guess normal brothers and sisters would have. We talk sometimes. A couple of them I haven't. My one sister, I love her from a distance. I have
Right.
that she's bipolar and schizophrenic and a whole list of other problems. And I just choose not to deal with that because, you know, she's the type that'll call me, "Ricky, am I on Jerry Springer? Turn it on." I'm like, "Look, don't call me with this craziness at 3 a.m. I'm trying to work, go to sleep, you know. You calling me, telling me my mom on Jerry Springer at 2 a.m. Get off the phone. Get off the phone, you know. Quit calling me." So she's the one I have to love from a distance.
Now, was that
my other sister? Yeah, my other sister.
And went through stuff as well when she was little?
Yeah, she was molested also. She was the one that was... You know, my mother had her son on her body when she was young. She witnessed
right.
the murder of...
That right there is probably a big root of the problem, I think.
Oh, yeah. She's seen quite a bit. She's seen quite a bit of things. I know she was in treatment in therapy for one therapy group where when she was in a group home, she had been... I mean, when she was adopted, her adopted father was molesting her. So she ran away.
Well,
now, she ran away when she ran away. She was hanging out with these guys, and they took her one day. They took her in an abandoned house, and they gang raped her. And she went through, you know, psychiatric help for it and had all types of problems and everything. Well, when she decided to go get help and go into a therapy group, she's in the therapy group talking about her rape. And one of the rapists is in the therapy group talking about how they abducted a girl and took her in this abandoned house, and it just happened to be my sister.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's given a testimony about raping a girl, and she happens to be the girl that's the one that he's actually talking about raping.
Wow.
So, but we talk every blue moon we get an opportunity to talk, but not that often. Because like I said, I'm trying to maintain what little bit of sanity that I still have, and I don't need to backtrack at all. My little brother, we're probably the closest of everyone in my family. because I've always known where he was, and we've always maintained contact with each other. He's a bouncer in Detroit. He's made a couple trips to prison in pretty much every halfway house in Detroit, but he's doing really good for the last 10 years. He's been out of trouble. He works as a bouncer in a couple nightclubs in Detroit, and he just loves being single and loves his life.
Good. Good. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. You've gone through a lot. You've overcome a lot of obstacles, and you know, we commend you, and we're really proud of you for changing your life and for being able to have that feeling, that want to be able to help the youth, you know, overcome things that you went through and to be able to mentor and work with them. So that's really great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you and Boyd giving me an opportunity to shed a little light on our program and showcase what we do and what we're about. And hopefully we can remain in contact and keep the relationship going. I really enjoyed myself and had a pleasure talking to you guys.
Oh, it's all good, my man. And like I say, when you can't get ready and y'all can get down to AZ and y'all can, rumble to the jungle with some off cash for my gym. You feel me?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I'm always down for that.
My man, you know. So we just want to thank you once again for coming on the show, man, and spreading your message and letting people know about the change and letting people know that God is definitely good all day, every day. And any last words, my friend?
I would just like to say once again, I really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to be on your show. And I'm going to be listening now for different topics. And if there's anything that I could ever do to help assist, you know, with your program and with what you guys are doing, don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm if I can't help, I can try to at least find resources of people that can. And let's just, you know, keep spreading the word and try to catch as many of these kids as we can and show them that the streets don't love them. You know, like
that's
you guys
really
say,
tough.
I mean, it couldn't be a better, more appropriate title for what your show is about, is because the streets do not love these kids at all. They don't love us. You know,
my
we got to protect them.
And that's real talk, man. And when you get time, Rick, make sure you go join our website, man, at the streets don't love you back.neem.com, you know, and put all your information up there, your boxing information, and we always tweet it and let people know and make people aware of what you're doing up there in Michigan as well, and Flint, and just drawing people to your program, you know what I mean, from our movement site, you know?
Okay, yep, I definitely will. I really appreciate it.
It's all good, man. So we send much love to you and the family, man. And we finna play a song, my brother. We want you to hang on the line. And we finna play our last song of the night. And we're going to dedicate this song to you and your family and your whole camp. And it's entitled Never Give Up by one of our homeboys out in Cali, OG Suicide. So we finna hit you with the Never Give Up track.
All right.
Look, homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all, huh?
What's good?
Can't make no shots.
I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect.
I know.
You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's all right.
No matter what it is in life that you want, you gotta go out there and get it. Don't let it come to a sleeper but a dream.
Never give up
on your goals, stay focused on you. Focus your views, succeed, cause I'm hoping you do. Keep climbing up the ladder, cause the key to success. Go hard and go home, never settle for less. Life is stress, but we gotta deal with it, homie. Send a prayer to the man to put a shield on it. Work hard for what you get, appreciate what you got. You can
welcome right back here to the hottest show worldwide, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And that track right there, Never Give Up, we dedicated that to my man Rick and his family. And that's real. And that track right there will make any man or woman stand up. You feel me?
That's right.
Yeah. So we just want to send much love to you, man. And like I said, keep in touch with us. Jump on the website, put all your information up there, and let's start networking and doing what we do, you know?
All right, I definitely will.
That's what it
is,
man.
If anybody's looking for information about our program, you can find it on blackscorpionboxing.com/selfdefense.com.
That's what it is, man. Any more of the information you'd like to get our viewers before we depart?
Well, if they want to reach us by phone, our number is 810-399-7485. I train children from 5 years old up to, I'm 47. So I keep it moving through all ages, basically. And then our male adults are also mentors in the program. So not only are they boxers, but they're also male mentors and role models for the kids to see. And because I need guys from every walk of life, you know, whether they, you know, have a record, don't have a record, have a skill, don't have a skill, everybody has something to offer to the program. So, you know, I'm always looking for male mentors. Like I said, once again, we can be reached at blackscorpionboxing.com/selfdefense.com.
My man. And with that being said, man, hey, we done had a great show tonight. And we asking all our viewers tonight to, you know, if you missed this show tonight, you also know you can also go back and listen to this show 24 hours a day when we put him up in the icon if you missed the show tonight. And I'll pass the mic to the missus for the last remarks.
I just want to thank everyone for listening to the show, for all those that join us in the chat room every week. We are live every Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern time. So jump on any time and listen live. And like Boyd said, if you missed the show, you can just log on to the website and listen to any show that we've had in the past anytime. So we've had a lot of great shows, a lot of information, and we just thank all of our supporters and listeners. And hang on.
Yeah, I just want to let everybody know before we get off the air, don't forget, if you're in Arizona, don't forget to be at the Celebrity Theater this Saturday, March 9th, for the Envoy promotion card. And we got two of our fighters from our gym that's going to be fighting on that card this weekend. We got Alexis and we got Victor that's going to be fighting on that card. And Alexis won the Golden Gloves this weekend. And he's going to be going to Las Vegas. So we just had to get that shout out to our team. And much
right.
love to our boy promotion, Robert and his crew out there. So be there this Saturday. Doors open, 4 o'clock. The fight starts, 6 o'clock. So we're doing our thing. Much shout out to our gym, Phoenix Boys.
That's right.
That's what it is.
All right. And then we just want you to remember, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us on our website at thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com or just Google The Streets Don't Love You Back and you'll find us. And once again, we just like to tell you to have a great week and join us back here next Wednesday night.
Good night.
Bye.